Hi, everybody. Your old friend Mike Houlihan here, back on Hibernian Radio. Hey, we're in the midst of this global pandemic, and it's pretty strange, Twilight Zone time. But the show must go on, and I want to thank all our sponsors for that. Lizzie McNeil's, where we're not there because they're closed, unfortunately. Bob Sheehy over at Sheehy and Sons Funeral Home. Jim Sweeney, Local 150, Operating Engineers. Ricardo Haggerty and Billy Haggerty over at Mike Haggerty GMC, Carol Ann Gallagher, and our friend Ron Young with McCann's Irish Oatmeal. Really want to thank these guys for sticking with us. Also all our friends at the Emerald Society. And today we'll be talking to Billy Donnelly and Jeff Lang, two great law enforcement officers. So let's get to it. Our first interview is an old friend of the show, and he's been invaluable to me over the last 18 months, finding guests, our old pal, Billy Donnelly.
I'm trying to figure out who was wrong and who was right. Got to move along, baby. Let's ride. You got to roll with the punches. Yeah, you got to go with the flow.
Hey, hi, everybody. Your old friend Mike Houlihan here. Welcome back to Hibernian Radio, brought to you by McCann's Irish Oatmeal, Mike Haggerty Buick GMC, Volkswagen, and personal injury attorney Carol Ann Gallagher. Very special show tonight because we're in a different location. We are on the old South Side on 106th and Western Avenue with the great Cork and Kerry Irish Pub. Doing a very special show tonight because we're also taping a TV show here later tonight. So we got a couple of Southside guys on the show. We're continuing our salute to Irish first responders, and we're very honored to have a friend of the show who's helped me since we started, Detective Bill Donnelly of the Chicago Police Department. Billy, welcome to the show.
Good afternoon.
Great having you here, and you really have helped the show over the last, what, 9-10 months?
It's been fun. Thanks, Willie.
Actually, this is our 38th show, folks, so we're heading in on a year. But Bill has been very helpful in finding guests for me, and now it's your turn. All right, so let's back. Where did you grow up?
I grew up here in the neighborhood.
Oh, yeah?
I'm still in West Beverly, and we had a few different homes all within the St. John Fisher area. I'm a
okay.
Fisher kid growing up.
Yeah.
Oldest of three. Started out 103rd in Whipple. My dad was on the job.
Oh, your dad was a cop,
so
yeah.
Never lived outside of 60655, actually.
So. And what parish? Oh, you're St. John Fisher. Where'd you
Fisher
go to high
guy.
School?
Marist.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
84 grad.
Yeah.
And my
kid,
boys
you're just
went there.
A young guy. Yeah.
Getting close. 4 more years.
Yeah. What do you mean 4 more years?
I just celebrated 25 years with CPD this
oh, that's
past
right.
Friday.
Yeah. Now, you were with Burbank first?
I was in the early
90s. For
4 90s,
years or
right.
something like that? Yeah.
Yeah. That was fun, too.
29 years law enforcement.
It's kind of hard to believe. They said it'd go by quick. They didn't lie.
Really?
Yeah. Yes, it did.
Yeah, that's great. You've been able. And where are you stationed out of?
I am an Area South Robbery Detective on Third Watch.
Okay.
So
what's
that's
that
the Pullman neighborhood, 727
oh,
East 111.
Oh, a lot of robberies over there, I'll bet.
But
yeah.
Myself and a lot of the detectives that live, we all work out this way, too. So it works out pretty well.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Yeah. Cases out here.
Now, do you have kids of your own?
I do.
Yeah, you do.
Two boys.
Yeah. I've met your son.
Yeah, they're in college.
Yeah.
One's up at Loyola, one's at Bradley.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what about your wife? Is she working? What's she? What,
she
you
is
mean
working.
Her?
My wife's a speech pathologist.
Oh yeah.
We're married 23 years.
Good for you.
Yeah.
And where'd you meet her?
Through my sister, Marquette grads.
Oh so no, kidding! Are. My kids went to Marquette for 2 years. So how'd you get into the cops?
Oh man, I avoided it for the longest. My dad, like I said, my dad was
were
on the job.
Were you in college for a while?
I did take classes off and on for years, but I finished up getting my undergrad and my master's degree on the department.
Oh, really? That's
yeah,
good.
They have
yeah.
a good program with that. But no, I tried a few other things before I came on board. I didn't think I wanted to do it.
Like what?
Well, at the time it finally dawned on me, I was taking the Rock Island train down to the different financial.
Oh, yeah.
I was doing the Board of Trade. The
sure.
first full day was a market crash.
Oh, wow.
Back in 87. That didn't start out very well.
Yeah.
Then I worked at the Mercantile Exchange some months after that.
Oh, yeah.
But every day I was open up the Tribune to the Chicagoland section, seeing who got indicted and what the mafia guys were up to, as opposed to reading the financials. Right?
That's like the Chicago sports page. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think I was fooling myself. I finally started taking tests and eventually got on Chicago.
Now, how did your dad feel about that?
He didn't like it.
No kidding.
No, he was very clear about it.
Is your dad still alive?
No, he passed on about 8 years back. Yeah.
Yeah. And he was a cop for
was. Yeah. So he was on Chicago. He was in the Marine Corps.
Uh-huh.
You're a Carmel guy. He went to Leo for a little while.
Okay. Brothers went to Leo. Yeah.
Then he moved on to the Marine Corps at the age of 17. His parents had to sign him in.
Wow.
He loved the Marine Corps, and he worked for the railroad for a while, and eventually Chicago police came a knocking, and he worked there starting in 63.
Yeah.
He was on the old task force and was there for the riots.
Oh, wow.
I always remember looking at
the 68
riot helmet.
Riots,
you got it. Yeah. I remember the riot helmet he had with a hole in the top of the size of a half dollar, from a big brick somebody threw at him.
But, yeah.
Yeah. Those guys were tough. But eventually he got into homicide, and that was the bulk of his career. And he had some very notable cases that I remember to this day that talked about. There was a guy by the name of Lester Harrison, who was the Grant Park murderer, a serial murderer, rapes and murders, very violent guy. This kind of terrorized
the city.
Did your
dad catch that guy?
He is the one that worked it as a detective. Him and a guy named Bernie Banahan.
Yeah, good name.
I remember the front page, back to when the Daily News was still around, all the papers, they were on the front page. And as a young kid, that was pretty mind-blowing, seeing your dad on the front page bringing this terrible person in cuffs into the police station, So, of course, we ran out and got all the copies and all that stuff. But we actually ran down to the Chicago History Museum recently and kind of reprinted all that stuff. You can find it all down there, Yeah, but this guy was it was just a horrible person without going into details. I mean, even to the cannibalism, he was a complete head case.
He was Dahmer before Dahmer.
Yeah, you got it.
Yeah.
So he was convicted, but he was found to be, insane and to the point where I saw the order where they locked him up indefinitely just to keep him off the street. I did a little research before I came over today, and in the so that's a case from like 72, in the early 70s. In the 80s, his family, Lester Harrison's family, came forward and came before the court and asked the judge to keep him locked up because they knew he would do this again.
I mean, no kidding.
The guy was out of control.
Well, good for them.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Right. So,
because some families would want him out.
Well,
let my people go.
Yeah. I think they knew what they were dealing with, though.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he had some pretty crazy cases. And I remember the Flight 191.
Oh, yeah.
Group of guys together went out there, and just what a terrible task that was, that was so destructive, and the carnage was just unbelievable.
Was that O'Hara?
It was O'Hara.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
We had a guy on the show last week, Denny McKenna, who was working, he was a wagon man for that thing.
I enjoyed that show.
Oh, wow, it was horrible. Yeah. So would you become a policeman while your dad was still alive?
I did. We mentioned Burbank briefly there. That may have, it seemed like, okay, you're there. But then in the meantime, I really did have my eye on the city, and I was testing with them. And after a while, we all just kind of grew up a little bit, and it is what it is, right? He wasn't thrilled about it at all. He made that clear, but
yeah.
I think he didn't want to answer to my mom about it,
And so you've been a Chicago cop for 25 years.
Yeah, this past Friday.
That's a long time.
It is, but I've had a lot of fun. I started out in
You been a detective that long?
No. It'll be 13 years this November as a detective.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's just been I'm just blessed to be doing that. I got to tell you, with the climate that we're in, I'm glad to be off the street, so to speak.
Yeah.
But it's a whole other animal to be following up these cases and try to bring them to the point where you can walk into a courtroom,
And you were in court this week, you were telling me.
I was.
Yeah. I'm glad you mentioned that, the climate we're in, because yesterday was 9/11. And right after that happened, there was a lot more support for first responders and everything. And it seems like lately people have forgotten that, and the media drives that, and it drives you nuts. So it's a bad, bad culture that we're in, and it's terrible what they're doing to our, particularly the police. I mean, those cops in New York with the guys throwing buckets of water on them and stuff.
Horrible.
If I was a cop, I'd just, it's easy for me to say, I'd have just shot the guy.
Yeah, well, that
but
might not have worked out so
well. You can't do that. Yeah.
No.
But you wish they did.
I do think this will pass, though. I was talking
so.
To an old-timer
yeah.
that was working during my dad's times recently, and he said, you know, we went through the same thing.
Yeah.
Just people absolutely hating it. And he says, eventually, the pendulum, that society starts to swing back
okay.
the way, realizing, you know what, we need a police department.
Absolutely. So, how do you get along without one?
It made me feel a little bit better knowing that we've been there before and things
yeah.
will get better.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, well, you're a robbery guy now. That involves a lot of danger as well because you got some bad actors out there.
Well, my fence jumping and jumping out of cars and chasing people down, those days are kind of past me.
It's thank
a,
God.
It's a kind of a different
yeah.
day for me now. Uh-huh.
But it's a mind game.
Yes, very yeah. much so. Very
yeah.
much so, yeah.
And you got that without right. discussing what you're working on currently, any stories you want to tell us?
You know what? I told you I was a 9th District guy. So that would have been right out of the academy in 95 till I made detective in 06.
Yeah.
And there is a story that came to me that I really enjoyed working on. And it's funny, sometimes the ones you don't think you're going to solve or get, and it, everything turns out okay, and then the ones that you're so close don't. It's weird
yeah.
how that works out. It's kind of a Murphy's Law sort of thing, I guess. But there was a guy named Fletcher Dogan. And
Irish guy?
No.
Oh, okay.
No. And he had come into a completely different neighborhood. He was from the far north side and just stumbled across this poor fella getting into his van, tried to rob him, and the guy wasn't having it, tried to drive off, and he shot him in the belly.
Ooh.
It was a bad, bad wound. This guy was screwed up for a long time. Now, the man who was shot was able to drive to his sister's house about half mile, three-quarters mile away, pounds on the door, walks in, the family lets him in, he announces, "I've been robbed," and he collapses onto the carpet. And when he does that, the round, unblemished, the full jacketed round that he had been shot with, falls out of his jacket. So it had passed through his body.
Wow.
Still in a pristine condition, onto the carpet. Now, when I got this case, that was the first place I went over to, and the family must have watched some crime shows because they
yeah.
were guarding that bullet like it was...
They were watching Forensic Files.
It was great.
My favorite show.
And you bet I documented it that way, how they were guarding that
yeah.
thing. So the evidence technician recovered it for me, and we moved on. Now, at that point, I had to get to the hospital, that, and the poor guy is under surgery. So we sent a beat car, a uniformed guy's. We don't know where our crime scene's at.
Yeah,
this
right.
guy's a mess.
Yeah.
He gives us a block, but we don't know exactly where to go. So a guy named Jimmy Zubik and Adam Scher head over to the street.
They're cops.
Where it occurred. They are, uniformed guys. And they head over there, and this is like about a wintertime case, you know. It's getting cold out. And they see a guy generally matching the description, and as soon as he sees them, he goes up on the front porch and rings the bell like he
like
belongs
he lives there.
Right,
what,
he's
yeah.
playing along.
Yeah.
Adam gets out of the car, and the foot chase is on.
Oh, no kidding.
And it goes
he
on for
off.
Two blocks. But while he's running, he flips the revolver over a residential backyard fence into a yard.
Oh.
So the guys...
I want to use to shoot that guy with
well,
him.
We don't know that at the time.
Yeah.
But that was the officer's point. They're like, yeah. it has to be the same.
Yeah.
There's guys with guns everywhere, right?
Yeah.
I'm not buying it. But they thought it was, and God bless them, they were right. So they catch this guy, and of course, he's all lawyered up. He's been in
sure.
the penitentiary so many times, and he doesn't want to talk to me, and it's a very short conversation. And I can't get at my victim for the longest time because he's all screwed
surgery
up.
Surgery and
but in
stuff.
The meantime, that bullet comes back, and we did a comparison to the gun that the officers recovered, and it's the same. The bullet matches the pistol because those guns, each one leaves its own footprint when you
yeah.
fire them.
Yeah, and those guys saw him throw the gun.
You got it. So we had a nice little case there, charged him with the... So now he's not going anywhere because he's in jail for UUW, unlawful use of a weapon.
Yeah.
On parole. He's done for a while.
Good.
So I presented the case to a woman in the state's attorney's office that I had some great cases with, and she was able to...
Can you say her name?
Her name is Margaret Wood. She did a wonderful job on
okay.
this case, and
yeah.
I really appreciated her work on this because it was very involved. I'm trying to give you the cliff notes, you know?
Yeah.
And the short of it is this case went on for 4 years.
Holy
and,
cow.
And he ended up getting 25 years. They found him not guilty on attempted murder, but they got him on the aggravated battery with a firearm
yeah.
is what they convicted him on. So 25 years, that's a lot, and we were pretty satisfied with that.
That's great.
Yeah.
And that was his name, Fletcher Dogan.
Fletcher Dogan.
Is he still on the can?
Yes.
Oh, that's good.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, he'll be there for some time.
Well, I don't know. Today, yeah. The guy killed somebody, and they let him out the next week. It's like, what the heck? It's crazy.
You don't want that one out there.
No. Okay. So give me a little typical day for you.
Typical day is opening up your inbox, electronic inbox, and looking at your cases and trying to strategically think, okay, what do I got to tackle first? Because now cameras are everywhere, absolutely yeah. everywhere, and we're on a time restriction with that because they erase over.
Now, this is just robbery.
Yeah.
Because my cousin or my sister-in-law's brother was a financial crimes copper. Jimmy Loftus. Do you know Jimmy Loftus by any chance?
I recognize his last name. That's okay. For sure. There's a few of them on there.
But he would basically be looking at bank statements and stuff.
Oh, okay.
That's, yeah. But yours is a little different.
Yeah. Violent Robert. Crime. You know, there's stick-ups for these these smartphones. And
oh, yeah.
You know, I work on a lot on the Gypsy Cons, the Rue Sentry burglaries on Grandma and Grandpa. Or the
wait, go back up a little bit.
Sure.
What's that?
So, again, property crimes, right? That's everything I do is a property crime. And you've got these... people from, originally, I suppose they're from Romania, or whatever.
Okay.
But gypsies can be anywhere. You know, we've got them too, right? They got the Irish travelers.
Yes, we do. I was going to call them another name, but I won't.
Okay. Billy's ready with the button. But they pride themselves in the art of the con. And what they'll do is they'll come up to somebody's door.
Always a senior.
Always a senior.
Yeah.
And how they always know where the seniors live is a
now that I'm a senior, they're throwing cons at me day and night.
I think if they came to Hooley's door, things wouldn't end up so
that's what I tell them. Yeah. It's like, hey, back off.
You might sell them something. But
yeah.
So, but the whole idea is to get in that house, you know? Oh, your
in
tree's
the
about,
house.
Yes, because your tree's about to fall down.
Yeah. I'm
you
with
know,
ComEd.
The water
something.
Mains are broken. We need to check the water, you know, whatever it is. They pose as utility people. And then once they lead Grandma or Grandpa down to the basement, they're running the hot water, they're making noise because in comes a fender two and three through the front door,
sure.
And they go right for the top drawer of the bedroom, and they're looking for their life savings, you know. And unfortunately, sometimes it's just that easy. A lot of people don't like banks and stuff. So, but staying ahead of those guys can be is a challenge. But
do they operate in like syndicates, these guys, or is it just lone wolves? Or
no, there's like family groups.
Oh, wow.
And they're not all that honorable amongst themselves. They're always willing to talk about it because it's always the other guy who's the bad guys.
Yeah,
we're the
sure.
good ones.
Yeah.
You know, we all work. Speaking of work, you know, a lot of times they'll do an aggravated home repair fraud case.
Oh,
I've had several this year that I've charged for bad concrete jobs.
Yeah.
This poor guy over east on Princeton had this guy come to his door and wanted to fix his... All he did was stain the sidewalk with a slurry of sand and, you know, terrible. My victim, so to speak, had the nicest house on the block. And, you know, now he's like, look what they did to my sidewalk. His lawn was immaculate. Now he's got this sidewalk that looks terrible, you know. But here he was a U.S. Army veteran sergeant.
Oh,
he worked in the steel mills for 33 years.
Yeah.
And just trying to enjoy his retirement. And these guys just keep coming back demanding more money. But we got that charged recently, too, and that took the better part of a year, but I was glad to get that one charged.
Now, you're also very involved in the Emerald Society.
I am.
You're a bagpiper. You played on the show 2 weeks, 3 weeks ago with Tom Cody.
That was fun.
Now, how'd you get into that?
Oh.
Did you have to learn? You got into that and then found out you got to learn how to play the pipes?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Just kind of thrown into it. Excuse me. One of our detectives is now our pipe major, a guy named John Harmoning, works with me over there at Area South, and he came by my desk and said, listen, we can keep talking about you joining the band for another 2 years, or you can show up on Thursday when we're doing a recruit drive. I put the information in your mailbox, and he walks away. I'm thinking, that SOB's calling me out. I'll show him. I'm going to go.
Yeah.
So it was brilliant the way he kind of laid that out on the water there, and I just bit at it, hook, line, and sinker. But I haven't looked back. My only regret is I didn't do it 10 years before I did. But
how long have you been doing it?
I'm with them eight, 9 years now.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you've been to Ireland with them and everything?
Oh, gosh. Not only did we go to Ireland, but we led the Dublin parade down O'Connell Street.
Yeah.
After we got a formal letter from the Lord Mayor himself of Dublin.
What year was that?
That was in 2015.
Okay.
And I think I was walking around about 3 inches off the ground for about 6 months after that trip. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
The Garda just treated us like gold.
It was
that's almost embarrassing.
Yeah.
They're a great group of guys. They come here. They march with us in the downtown parade and the real parade on the south side.
Which is right outside this door
here.
Yes,
it is.
Yeah. Every year, right down Western Avenue. So I'm assuming you march with the Emerald Society in that, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, there's a guy named Adrian Cahill who's a Garda. He organizes a large groups of the Irish, the coppers that come over, and we've gotten to be pals, you know. He's out there in Limerick, working the streets of Limerick now. But, that's been really nice. There's a lot of camaraderie and great pitcher shot. You know, these guys wearing their dress blues.
Yeah.
The guys and girls that come over from...
Skinny used to have a big party in his backyard.
Oh, nice.
In a tent right after the parade, and you'd see all the guys from Ireland there. And yeah, that's cool.
You know, we actually did about three parades. We did one in Limerick, and we did one in Selbridge, a little town. And those people were just as proud and came out just as strong as...
Yeah.
I mean, in Dublin, it's 20 people deep. Granted, there's more people,
sure,
but with just as much enthusiasm and pride down in the little town, you know?
Yeah.
They weren't about to be outdone.
And how many guys did you take over there?
Oh, gosh, I think we had about 30. You know, we had the Emerald Society of Illinois with us as well, so there were three busloads of people.
Yeah.
And it was a constant, and the peanut gallery says how many?
46.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
The statistician is in the house.
They're making signals behind his back and everything.
Was that a tomato?
But folks, we're talking with Detective Bill Donnelly, robbery detective. He went to Marist. He grew up here in St. John Fisher. We're in his backyard practically. Now, are any of your boys interested in law enforcement?
Not in the least. But before we leave Ireland, Huli, I got to give you just one quick little blip on an honor that we had there. Out of everything I talked to you about, was going into the Garda's Memorial Gardens and piping for their fallen. That was just, they hadn't had a band in there since 1922, and that was the English.
No kidding.
It was a heck of an honor.
Yeah.
They pulled the stops out for us, so that was the probably almost memorable.
Why did they choose the guys from Chicago?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's terrific.
But it was pretty neat to do that. You know, we played in there next to their memorials, and they had their mounted unit in there, and it was nice.
How many gigs a year does the Emerald Society have for you guys? Or is it if you can make it, or how does that work?
Oh, as far as the events that we play?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Chicago.
Exactly. There's a percentage like anything else. You've got your band jobs and extra jobs and different things like that.
Yeah.
The things we try not to miss are the parades, because that's a big event.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's high-profile stuff, so you try to bring everybody out for the parades, and those are a lot of fun.
And, unfortunately, the funerals.
The funerals is something that is just kind of an unspoken thing. I mean, you just absolutely try to go. You know, it's all hands on deck for the line of duty funerals, because that's how we were formed
in
82.
We had Tom Cody on the show.
I'm sure Tom explained all that, right, with Fahey and O'Brien going down.
Yeah, and about how Jane Byrne gave $5,000 and
said,
you got to get your own pipes and drums.
With her own money.
Yeah, God bless
She started us out. So, the line of duty funerals, and unfortunately, we've been very busy with that this past year.
Yeah, I know.
Between us and the troopers, Illinois State Troopers,
it's
been some blood. But that's just an honor in itself to be out there doing that.
Yeah.
You know, you're really standing at attention and making sure everything's ready to go.
You know, I think this neighborhood really should be proud for what they did with Commander Bauer and over at St. Margaret's and the whole thing of the procession going. Was it Holy Sepulchre where he was buried?
We were stationed out at Sepulchre, yeah.
Unbelievable.
It is. So we were stationed at the end when they came in, and they had the horse-drawn carriage and the whole bit at the end of the procession. That was a limited amount of people that were allowed in there, so things were a little more solemn. But I had heard about all the people that came out from the neighborhood and stood on the sidewalks, the schools emptying out, and you know, just blue ribbons and things hung everywhere, you know. Yeah, that was really nice.
Any other statements you want to get in before you?
Before I interrupt,
you know, a lot of people on the police force and the fire department. What do you attribute
that to?
It's
the neighborhood. I mean, I have an old joke. If you know, I was working on a burglary pattern right now without going into details, and a lot of people are victims. Are police and fire, but that's only because you throw a rock in this neighborhood, you hit seven policemen and eight firemen. It's just there's nowhere else to really go. We're at the city's edge here, you know?
Yeah.
So I suppose when you grow up in the same neighborhood and go into a line of work that also ties you into the neighborhood and the school and your kids, there's all kinds of levels. Knights of Columbus, you know that?
Yeah.
There's all kinds of ways you meet
Father
people.
Perez
Perez, Knights of Columbus, Council
1444. Hey, you wanted to mention that.
Aw, gee, Huli.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Twist my arm.
Yeah,
so,
telling me all about it.
I will tell you about it. On September 20th and the 21st through the 22nd, we are having our annual People with Disabilities Drive, and we support 13 different charities, Mount Greenwood Special Rec, St. Cadjutan Spread Group, you know, there's the Garden Center. They're all supporting people with activities to get them out and active, and it's called the People with Disabilities Drive, otherwise known as the Tootsie Roll Drive.
Yeah, the Tootsie Roll Drive.
Yes, everybody knows it.
And when's that start? Next week?
We'll be shaking the can on our corners, proverbially shaking that can, on Friday at 6:30 in the morning, and we'll be out on the corners through 4 p.m. on Saturday. Anybody who thinks they want to give us a hand, because we have plenty of corners to cover.
Yeah.
We did really well last year. Somebody else ran it. It's a bit of a daunting task. Myself and Larkin over here, my buddy from Ireland, came with on the trip. We're running it, and we could use a little help. So if anybody wants to step out and wear the apron that says, you know.
Do you have to Knights be a member of the Knights of Columbus?
No. We appreciate it. You can give me a call at 773-914-2635. Or you can call Brian Larkin, the better-looking guy. He's 773-343-9841. And we'll find you a corner. I appreciate you bringing that up.
Sure. Let's get out there and buy those Tootsie Rolls, gang.
We have big shoes to fill this year.
Yeah.
A lot of people counting on us.
All right, so will you come back someday on the show? We keep sending me guests. Great. Yeah.
Sure, why not?
All right. Bill Donnelly, thank you. Stay safe out there, pal. God bless you. Thanks for doing the show.
Oh, thanks for having me.
We're going to be right back on the Hibernian Radio Show after these messages from our friends.
They say Irish women can be a strange blend of shyness, of pride and conceit, yet they have a stubborn refusal to bow in defeat. Their hate is as fierce as their devotion is grand, yet there is no middle ground on which they will stand. My family and friends tell me this sums me up exactly. I'm Carol Ann Gallagher. I am a proud Irish immigrant and now a partner at Dwyer & Coogan, a personal injury law firm here in Chicago. I was born and raised on a little island off the coast of Donegal. I studied and practiced law in Ireland before emigrating to Chicago 11 years ago, and I took up the practice of law here too. As a personal injury lawyer, I've been blessed to help those who find themselves in vulnerable and tragic circumstances. In my proud representation of families injured by the negligence of others, I've secured millions of dollars in verdicts and settlements for my clients. I can be your advocate. I can have your back. I will fight for you when you feel like you have no fight left within yourself. For more information, please go to my website at dwyercoogan.com or give me a call, Caroline Gallagher, at 312-543-4642. That's 312-543-4642. All of our consultations are free. Thanks for listening.
History going all the way back to 1896, the International Union of Operating Engineers has continued to protect workers and their families with loyalty and brotherhood. Local 150 has continued to thrive through economic booms and busts with careful training and aggressive organizing. Under the leadership of President and Business Manager Jim Sweeney, Local 150 has implemented programs and action plans to create work, protect benefits, and keep members working. And they've been helping the Irish-American community of Chicagoland for just as long. The Hibernian Radio Show is proud to be associated with Jim Sweeney and Local 150, and we salute the continuing efforts of the International Union of Operating Engineers and their support of Irish and Irish-American families now and in the future. Thanks to Local 150.
Hey, that was a terrific interview with our old friend, Billy Donnelly. Very kind of him to do that and return via the radio waves. And speaking of radio waves, you know, Irish radio is becoming rare here in Chicago. But we will survive. You know, we lost the Gaelic Park radio show. We lost Sean Ginelli's Good Morning Ireland radio show. But Hibernian Radio and the Hoolies Hoolie are sticking around. So stick with us. You can always listen to the shows every Saturday night from 7 to 8 on WSBC 1240 on your AM dial. And then immediately following my show, you can listen to my sons and their pal Clay O'Brien with the Hoolies Hooli, which is a very funny show, especially this week. Tell some very funny stories about, in particular, check out the story about Picasso's dump. Anyway, you know, Billy, whenever I'm walking down Western Avenue and I look in the window of Ken's or Wrong's or Hart's or any of those great Irish saloons, and I see the ghost of my old pal, Jimmy Goff, through the mist, and he says to me, "Hey, Orly, who died?" Just got a couple this week, thanks to our old pal, PGOD, our 94-year-old Obit Scout. Josephine Crawley passed away peacefully at home in Selbridge, County Kildare, Ireland, March 29th, just the other day. She was a loving wife of the late Brendan and the mother of John, Ann, Irene, and Alice. God rest her soul, Josephine Crawley. Also, big news flash this morning was that veteran White Sox radio broadcaster Ed Farmer passed away. Terrific guy and a Southsider and a St. Rita alum. Had the honor of meeting him once when I was with the Flood Brothers and we were in the booth with him. He'll be missed because he was just terrific. I used to turn off the sound because I couldn't stand listening to Hog Harrelson. I turn off the sound while watching a Cubs or Sox game and listen to Ed Farmer. So God rest his lovely soul, Ed Farmer. And then a big one. The great Mount Carmel legend, Frank Maloney. Frank was my football coach at Mount Carmel back when I was a nipper in the 60s. And he also coached at Michigan and Syracuse. Frank was the beloved husband and best friend of Kathleen for 50 years. He was the loving and devoted father of Michael, Molly, Kelly, and Kelly. Oh, Michael Kelly. Oh, his daughter married Mike Kelly, who we've had on the show. Mike is the head of the Chicago Park District, and he also has a daughter named Kelly. Frank was a teacher, coach, and mentor to many. He started his career as a speech teacher. He was my speech teacher, actually, and I'll tell you about that in a minute. And the head football coach at Mount Carmel High School, where he led the caravan to the 1967 Prep Bowl Championship in front of a crowd of 58,000 at Soldier Field. He then returned to his alma mater as a football coach at the University of Michigan from 1968 to 1973. Frank became a head football coach at Syracuse University from 74 to 80, and leading them to an Independence Bowl victory in 1979. Frank returned to Chicago in 1981 to raise his family and become director of ticket operations for the Chicago Cubs from 1981 to 2011. Frank believed in faith, hard work, education, and unwavering ethics through all of his professional accomplishments. His greatest treasure was his family. Now, indicative of that is his funeral arrangements are handled by who? Sheehy, where all the right people go. But also, I have a little story to tell you about Frank. Frank was, you know, I was 14 years old and was a freshman at Mount Carmel. He was my speech teacher, and he was also the football coach, and I was on the football team. And he was a scary guy. He was an All-American at Michigan, and you didn't want to cross his path or get on his bad side because he thought nothing of putting on a helmet and in his civvies and getting right down on the line with you and scaring the hell out of everybody. We used to call him Mad Dog Maloney. But he mellowed later in age, became a terrific father and grandfather. But the story I wanted to tell you was when I was a sophomore and the varsity, I was a kid on the bench most of the time, but still on the team. And we had a pretty good team. It was 1964, if I believe. And we were going to the playoffs, and it looked like we could take the city championship. So we were scheduled to play Weber for the Catholic League Championship, the Red Horde of Weber High School, in Soldier Field. Big deal. They had Vito Reconelli on their team and all these mother monsters. And the week before the game, four of our starters got caught drinking at a party. Now, Maloney had an edict. Anyone caught drinking during the football season would automatically be kicked off the team. And when he found out about it, these guys were kicked off a week before the big game. As we're going into the city championship and the Catholic League championship, he just said, "That's it. You guys are off the team." And There were guys outside the coach's locker room crying, trying, begging, no, please, no. And it taught me a lesson I will never, ever forget. The rules are rules, you know. And he felt bad about it as well. There was a teacher who had ratted these kids out. And I remember Coach Maloney never spoke to that teacher again because the teacher put him in a position where he would have a moral dilemma. And he made the right choice, though, I'll tell you that. I never, ever forgot it, and that was over 50 years ago. So God rest his lovely soul, Coach Frank Maloney. There won't be another one like him, I can tell you that. Okay, Billy, we can close up the crypt now. We will return with a retired Cook County Sheriff's Police Narcotics Investigator, Jeff Lang. So grab your hat and your beer and enjoy.
McCann's Irish Oatmeal. We've been warming the hearts, minds, and souls of the most discriminating oatmeal lovers for over 150 years. From the family farm to your table, enjoy the whole grain goodness of McCann's Irish Oatmeal today. Available at your local grocery store.
When your family has suffered a loss, there's one family I know who will be there for you. Robert J. Sheehy & Sons Funeral Homes are third generation, family-owned and operated. The Sheehy family has dedicated their lives serving families throughout Chicago and the southwest suburbs. The Robert J. Sheehy & Sons Funeral Home was incorporated in 1913 as a storefront at 76th and Halsted in Chicago. At the time, this was one of the few standalone funeral homes of its kind and was to be the first of many to come bearing the Sheehy name. The founder, Roger Sheehy Sr., was soon joined in business by his three sons, Roger Jr., Jack, and Bob. This trademark of service is evident 98 years later, as Bob and Jim Sheehy, third generation, own and operate two locations in Orland Park and Burbank. At Sheehy's, the name on their sign outside the funeral home means something. For them, it's very important that everyone be treated as if they were family, friend, or neighbor, as they very well could be. When my brother Willie died a few years ago, the Sheehys took very good care of our family. And you know, you never forget something like that. Their entire staff cares about each and every family they serve. Every detail is handled in a professional and personal manner. On a daily basis, the directors Bill Kiley, Mike LaRock, and John Sullivan, and the rest of the staff take great pride in their work, serving families as if they were their own. Bob Sheehy will tell you, we pride ourselves on offering the highest level of professionalism with every family we serve. Robert J. Sheehy & Sons Funeral Homes, here for you since 1913.
And we're back on Hibernian Radio. Hi, everybody. Your old friend Mike Houlihan. So great here at Cork and Kerry. It sounds a little quiet tonight, but it's going to get crazy here because we're taping our Irish pub here later tonight. So I grabbed a couple of Southside guys, old pals. And boy, we got one of the all-time all-timers here tonight. We got Jeff Lang on the show. Jeff, welcome back to Hibernian Radio. So good to have you. Now, can you remember when you were here before?
Vaguely. It looked different. The water's missing.
Yeah.
You know, but I got to thank you. Okay. Yeah. I now know how George Gobel felt when he followed Frank Sinatra on the Tonight Show.
Oh, you mean tonight?
Nobody can follow Donnelly Bill. Are you kidding me?
Donnelly Bill.
And then he brings up Fletcher Dugan.
Yeah.
My dear sweet Irish mother's maiden name is Dugan.
Oh, is it?
So yeah. I have
That's
to deal
why I thought the
now.
Guy was Irish, yeah. Now, you did 30 years with the Cook County Sheriff's Police.
I did.
You know, now I was talking to PJ O'D today, and I said, ask him if he knows Terry Lanigan. Do you know Terry Lanigan?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I actually
worked. He was Mike Sheehan's partner.
Yes, he was. I actually worked at White Sox Park with Terry.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He parks the cars there and stuff.
Yes,
yeah.
He did.
Yeah. All right, so I know you've had some amazing stories. One of my favorites of yours was when you were undercover and you got the long hair and the beard and everything, and the dope dealer took a liking to you, and he had some fancy truck, and he goes, you got to get yourself one of these, and you said, I'll have one soon. Yours.
Well, it was a nice truck, and he was so proud of it, and you know, we had finally got to that point of buying dope from this guy where it was going to be over.
Yeah.
And once we
he was going to be over.
Yeah, he was very upset.
Yeah.
I took his truck.
Yeah.
And then when I sat down on the interview with him, he wasn't much happier either, so.
Now, when did you retire? How long ago?
I was out 3 years in July.
Do you miss it?
I do not.
No, okay.
I do not. The job has changed.
We were just talking about that.
You know, tremendously. I had a great time. I had a great run. I figured 30 years was enough.
Yeah.
I kind of miss the teaching aspect. I do miss seeing the new recruits at the academy and getting involved with them from day one.
Yeah.
Because that was one of the other things that I did. But as far as the other stuff, you know, let a new kid have the job, you know, let it go forward.
Now, you're a Bridgeport guy.
I am.
I still are.
It is.
Where'd you, did you go to Nativity? Grammar school?
No, I was married at Nativity.
Okay.
I started out at a school called St. John de Pomacy, which closed. Went over to St. Anthony's.
Okay.
Which merged with All Saints St. Anthony's.
Okay.
And then on to De La Salle.
Oh, the De La Salle, the Meteors. Okay. It's all coming back to me now. So let's go back. What a long and storied career you had. How long before you started working undercover?
I was probably about 8 years in.
Oh, okay.
I was still in a patrol division. I was an FTO. I was on the first watch. And the district commander suggested that...
FTO is field training officer, right?
Yes.
Okay.
And he suggested that I was more suited to being a narcotic unit. I don't know if that was a compliment or not.
You look like a bum, basically. Yeah.
Yeah. We found a way to get the job done, sometimes much to his chagrin, and other times they were very happy with us.
Yeah.
But it was definitely a game changer. I didn't ever think that I could have done that type of work. I worked with some outstanding guys and girls that were very experienced narcotic officers, wrote tremendous reports. And first and foremost, it was always officer safety.
Yeah.
There was no stupid chances taken.
Yeah. You know,
the old saying was, if they've got dope today, they'll have dope tomorrow. We don't jump for them. We move them around. They don't move us around.
Oh, that's a good policy.
And
yeah.
We do it where we're safe, and we'll go from there.
Yeah. And you run into some bad dudes in that business.
Yeah. Well, at the start of my career at the jail, met a lot of bad dudes.
Oh, so, I bet you did. Yeah.
You know, it was just kind of like an ongoing thing. So it was not a shock, that's for sure. And I always said the Cook County Jail is the best place to start out if you want to be the police.
Yeah.
You learn a job there. You take what you learn from there onto the street.
Yeah.
It'll never hurt you.
There's a lot of bad dudes in Cook County Jail. How many people are in that jail now? 10,000?
I think there's 700 now.
That's all?
Well, there used to be 10,000 or so, but now everybody's kind of let out.
That's the problem.
You know, you go on your way, or let's see, we won't charge this guy, and put a band on that guy. And
well, what do you think that's all about? I mean, I think that's part of the culture that Billy and I were talking about, but I think a lot of that we can talk about our state's attorney being responsible for that.
Well, responsible doesn't go with that. With that, that's an oxymoron.
Okay.
But it's just like, would you want a plumber doing your electrical work?
No.
Well, maybe people that are in law enforcement should run law enforcement entities.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
There's a start there.
Yeah.
Or prosecutors prosecuting criminals actually have prosecuted criminals successfully.
Exactly. People who have been in the courtroom and, prosecutors, I don't think she's ever prosecuted any. Well, she was going to prosecute Jussie Smollett. Hey, speaking of which, have you seen that Dave Chappelle thing?
I saw a clip of it.
Oh, my
God. And I can't wait to see the whole thing because Dave is funny.
He's very funny.
Dave is one of the funniest men in the world.
I want to see the whole thing, too. But I did see the clip about that French actor, Jussie Smollett. Mm-hmm. That's what he's calling him. All right, so you got some notes here. What do you want to tell me, Jeff?
Well, the first I wanted to remind you about the wonderful Emerald Society of Illinois, which
you,
of course,
you
are
got
a member
me.
Of.
You recruited me.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you.
Not a problem. I know you have a conflict on the 28th of September when we have our dinner dance out at Gaylord Park.
For people who
can't make it down for your Huli, maybe they can make it out to the dinner dance.
That's a Saturday night.
Saturday night at beautiful Gaylord Park.
Right.
Pipes and drums at the Emerald Society will perform. And music for all Irish occasions by Fast Eddie McAteer.
Oh, Eddie McAteer,
Eddie,
sure.
Fast Eddie, great guy. Yeah. So it'll be an outstanding evening.
Yeah.
And they pour a nice pint there.
They do indeed.
Thank God.
I spent a lot of time there. Actually, I was there for the Kerry-Dublin match last week, that ended up in a tie. And this Saturday, they're going to meet again. Saturday night, I think. All right, what are your other notes you got there, Mr.
Did you
Jeffrey?
Know I was an ordained minister, Hooley? Did you know that?
That's kind of scary.
It is. It's not a joke. It's actually true.
Yeah.
It's a strange story.
Is this something you sent away for in the mail?
Well, I didn't, but somebody did.
Oh, okay.
My old Meg partner, okay. Paul Urinich.
Explain Meg. What
Meg
that
was
is.
The Metropolitan Enforcement Group. It was a, and there are Megs across the United States still. None in Cook County, unfortunately. And it was just a narcotic task force. Mm-hmm. And we were out there buying dope undercover. That was our focus.
Yeah. And that's what most Megs do?
Yep. That's the focus of it.
Yeah.
And it's the state police, the county police, and all suburban agencies and entities, and all one big group. And you all get mixed together, and you work as a team. So during my Meg days, my partner was Paul Urinich, who retired as a sergeant out of Summit Police Department.
Okay.
Very, very dear friend, very, very close brother, and known his daughter and son since they were little. Well, his daughter is getting married, and it's right around the time Paul retired. So we're at his retirement party, and his daughter and son-in-law-to-be come up to me and say, "We have something very serious to talk to you about." Which kind of gets me thinking, somebody's sick.
Yeah.
So they get me cornered, and they say, "Well, we'd like you to marry us." Well, I didn't really have any clue what they were talking about.
Yeah.
And her now husband, Chris, says to me, "Well, we...
They know you're her dad's, father's
good
pal.
I've been around them for their entire life and got to know her now husband when they first started dating. Great guy. He's a firefighter in LaGrange Park.
Okay.
And they were very serious about me marrying them and becoming an ordained minister. So she went online, filled out everything, and about a month later, I got a box with a bunch of books.
Did you have to read them?
I had to read the books, yes. There wasn't a lot of pictures. And I went to the Institute, Uli, and I...
The Institute.
So,
on 34th Street, yes.
So, yes, I became an ordained minister, and then, believe it or not, another friend, a very good friend of ours, his son and daughter-in-law were getting married out in Hennepin, Illinois. I married them as well.
And is there a specific marriage ceremony when you're... What's the church? What's the name of the church?
Well, this wasn't a church.
You're a minister of something.
There's no official name.
Oh.
It's called the Rose Ministries. Hey, Billy gave me a blessing. We're good to go, see?
The Rose Ministries, okay. Yeah.
The one at Lake Thunderbird was actually done on Lake Thunderbird at the dam. And when...
Was that where the wedding was?
Yeah, right there.
Where's Lake Thunderbird?
Oh, it's in beautiful... Putnam County, Illinois.
Okay.
In the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
It's where your friend McGillicuddy runs around when he escaped from Hooleytown. That's another story. Bill Donnelly could probably tell you more about that. He's pretty good friends with Donnelly Bill. I don't understand the relationship with the two, but there's something there. So I got that. I did the two weddings.
Did you wear a special outfit or anything?
No, not really. Oh, okay. Put on a coat and a tie. Try to look good.
Okay. By the power vested in me. Is that a line that you use?
We kind of wrote something out that we took from the book and then allow them to make whatever changes they want or if there's anything specific that they wanted in there. And then,
Now, this was after you retired?
Yes.
Because it's too bad you could have used that while you were investigating guys and tell them you could hear their confession.
It might have worked.
Yes.
It might have worked.
Yeah, sure.
Mm-hmm. Anything's possible.
And so what do you, I know you work out like a madman. What else do you do to keep yourself busy these days?
While
you work with the Emerald Society.
Well, you know, the Beagle.
Well, the Beagle is your dog.
Beagle's not real happy right
Bailey.
Now. Yeah. The missing of Hooleytown has caused some anxiety for the Beagle.
We've had some scheduling conflicts to get Hooleytown. We might be able to slip it in tonight. We'll see. Yeah.
So, you know, just doing the normal stuff, life in general, just kind of running around and, you know, doing things that isn't that. I seem to be able to keep myself busy. So,
what do you got written down there, officer?
It's remind me to go home when I'm done and get milk.
That's the wrong note.
Wrong note. No. So, did you want me to tell you another story?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Let's see. What should I tell you this time? Going back a number of years ago, I think I was in a gang unit. And over the air, the Forest Preserve Police, who share our radio band, were looking for a possible suicidal subject in a forest preserve.
Yeah.
And I happened to be right near there. So I said, well...
What forest preserve do you remember?
It was up north somewhere. I don't remember exactly which one.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, I'll take a ride. You know, maybe it could help the lad out a little bit. So I get in there and start walking in, and I find the officer, a newer police officer. On foot.
Yeah.
And walking around in the woods, and the Forest Preserve officer's kind of tired. He's leaning on a tree, and he's wiping his head off, and I says, "Is everything okay?" He says, "Yeah." He says, "You know, but the damn tree sap keeps dripping on my head." And I go, "Oh, okay, all right." And I'm looking up, and I said, "Have you got any idea where this guy could be?" And he goes, "I have no clue." I said, "Well, you know, he might be hanging around in here somewhere, and you might want to step aside a little bit." It just, the light didn't go on for him. I had to point up. The guy was in the tree up above
right him. Right above you.
Right above him. He looked everywhere but up.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Now, what was dripping on his head is your guess is as good as mine. I don't know.
And then did you take out your piece and say, "Get out, come on down"?
No,
but the guy was going to commit suicide.
He was hanging. He was through.
Oh, he was through.
Oh, yeah. He was up there for a
while. Oh, my God.
As we say, he was through gambling.
He was done. Oh, see, I didn't realize. I thought he was a suspect, but no, he was a suicide. Oh, my God. And so there he was, just swinging back and forth, yeah, right above his head.
Dripping all over the Forest Preserve, coppered it. I had no clue.
That's great. That's a great story. You don't want to give that officer's
name. I would never do that to him.
That would be McGillicuddy, yeah? Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, we got to wrap it up. Until next time, always a pleasure to have you,
Thanks, Jeff Lang. It's always
Thank
fun.
Thank you so much for everything you do for the show with the Emerald Society and your service to the nation and the people of Cook County. God bless you. Thank you, sir. All right. We're going to take another break here on Hibernian Radio. We'll be right back after these messages from our friends. There's only one Irish pub in the Chicago River, and that's Lizzie McNeil's at 400 North McClure Court. We spend a lot of time there, taping the Hibernian Radio Show at Lizzie McNeil's every Wednesday night. You can escape the hustle and bustle of Navy Pier and relax at Lizzie McNeil's. Our old pal John Wren is your host. Please say hello when you stop by for one of their ice-cold brews in an authentic Irish pub. One visit and you'll be calling it your hometown hangout. We've been hanging at Lizzie's for going on 10 years now, so join us. When the weather gets nice, they have two outdoor patio areas where you can take advantage of the sunshine and a cafe menu of salads, sandwiches, and appetizers. Lizzie's also has a great private party room that's perfect for birthdays, graduations, and most nights at Lizzie's you can meet the elite of Chicago's Irish-American community. So stop by Lizzie McNeil soon, right by the river, and tell them you were sent by your old pal, Hooley. Thanks.
McCann's Irish Oatmeal. We've been warming the hearts, minds, and souls of the most discriminating oatmeal lovers for over 150 years. From the family farm to your table, enjoy the whole grain goodness of McCann's Irish Oatmeal today. Available at your local grocery store.
They say Irish women can be a strange blend of shyness, of pride and conceit, yet they have a stubborn refusal to bow in defeat. Their hate is as fierce as their devotion is grand, yet there is no middle ground on which they will stand. My family and friends tell me this sums me up exactly. I'm Caroline Gallagher. I am a proud Irish immigrant and now a partner at Dwyer & Coogan, a personal injury law firm here in Chicago. I was born and raised on a little island off the coast of Donegal. I studied and practiced law in Ireland before emigrating to Chicago 11 years ago, and I took up the practice of law here too. As a personal injury lawyer, I've been blessed to help those who find themselves in vulnerable and tragic circumstances. In my proud representation of families injured by the negligence of others, I've secured millions of dollars in verdicts and settlements for my clients. I can be your advocate. I can have your back. I will fight for you when you feel like you have no fight left within yourself. For more information, please go to my website at dwyercoogan.com or give me a call, Caroline Gallagher, at 312-543-4642. That's 312-543-4642. All of our consultations are free. Thanks for listening.
Deep in the south side of Chicago.
Get me out of here.
So deep. All the way up to 93rd Street.
Get me out of here, please.
Across the tracks.
where they only spoke Yakida.
Oh.
And the people barely survived on a strict diet of crunchy bones and bamboo. Hey, man, you want another drink?
Yes.
Huh? Can I get you two?
This yeah.
is almost 70 years we're talking.
70 when years?
The what? Hit on his teeth,
oh.
Something entered his cranium.
His cranium?
And wormed around his frontal lobes and took him to a state of mind.
Mind.
Hidden place on the other side of bunkers.
Welcome.
A crazy, silly, screwy.
Have a seat.
Known as... Hooli Town.
Hooli Town.
Welcome to Hooli Town. Don't stay too long, though.
How come?
Because you might not come back. Welcome to Hooli Town.
Why, thank you.
And you're welcome.
Hey, welcome to Hooli Town. Great to be back in Hooli Town. To tell you the truth, I missed it during this coronavirus lockdown. I'm getting real sick of it, but we'll survive. And speaking of surviving, I was hoping that Billy, if you would please give me a hand with this door.
Push it.
Prince Harry and Prince William's relationship is still a bit awkward.
Who cares?
Hey, Ben Affleck would love to have a baby with his girlfriend, Ana de Armas.
Who cares?
Jennifer Garner doesn't want her kids to meet her ex, Ben Affleck's girlfriend, Ana de Armas.
Who cares?
Duchess Camilla's ex-husband, Andrew Parker Bowles, has tested positive for coronavirus.
Who cares?
Joe Biden's son, Hunter Biden, welcomes fifth child, his first with wife Melissa Cohen.
Who cares?
Prince Charles reflects on the coronavirus pandemic 1 week after he tested positive.
Who cares?
And finally, Piers Morgan brands Madonna's self-indulgent twerp and annoying after her bizarre coronavirus nude bath video.
Who cares?
Billy, wait. Let me, hey, get up on my shoulders. Can you reach that latch at the top? Get it right up there. Yeah. All right, thank you. Okay, on our way out the door, one joke. A farmer was sitting on his porch one day when a young man drives up and comes to the door. Sir, I was driving by and I noticed you had a lot of milkweed in your pasture. Would you mind if I went out and got some milk? You don't get milk from milkweed, the farmer replied. Oh, yes, you do, said the young man. I have a degree in agriculture from Texas A&M. I know all about it. Well, help yourself, said the farmer. He soon saw the young man coming back to his car with two buckets full of milk. The next day, the farmer was again sitting on his porch when the same young man drove up. Sir, yesterday when I was getting milk, I noticed you had some honeysuckle vine on the fence row. I wondered if you would mind if I got some honey. You ain't gonna get honey from honeysuckle, said the farmer. Again, the young man explained about his degree from A&M. So the farmer agreed to let him collect some honey. Soon, the young man came back to his car with two buckets full of honey. The next day, the same young man drove up to the farmer's house. Sir, yesterday when I was getting the honey, I noticed you had some pussy willow trees down by the creek. The farmer jumped up and said, let me get my boots, I'll go with you. Okay. Thanks, everybody. I hope we got the shrimp shot in there, Billy. Thanks, everybody. Great show this week. We'll see you next week. Stay safe, stay inside, and God bless you all.
Well, I look down the road and I wonder. My shoes.